On today's show, the Houston Rockets have pick number 17 in this year's NBA draft by way of the Brooklyn Nets. And what are some of the names that might make sense for the Houston Rockets to be taking a look at with pick number 17? Today, we take a look at Ty Washington, Nikola Jovic, and Tari Eason, and break down each of those guys, their perspective fit with the Houston Rockets, whether or not they'll be available at 17 and more, coming up right here at Locked On Rockets.
This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
With the second pick in the 2021 NBA Draft, the Houston Rockets select Jalen Green.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep getting better every day. I'm going to keep perfecting my craft. And every time I step on that floor, I'm coming.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's up and welcome to another edition of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian, also host of Locked On NBA Mondays, host of the State of the Rockets podcast, as well as founder of ClutchCityControlRoom.com. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at JT Gatlin and the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets. Now, today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online. It's where the game starts. As always, appreciate you making Locked On Rockets your first listen each and every day. Joining us now is a good friend of the show, draft expert and founder of T and Rockets, in-depth Rockets coverage, breakdowns, analysis, all of that, Nathan Fogg. You can follow on Twitter at NathanFogg1. Nathan, it's been a minute since we've had you on the show, and now we know for, you know, well, I can't say no, but we know at least where the Brooklyn Nets pick is going to fall, and that's at pick number 17, and that's where we're focusing our efforts for today's show. Some of the guys, the interesting names at pick number 17. So we've got three guys lined up today that we're going to be talking about. We've got Tari Eason, we've got Ty Washington, and then we have Nikola Jovic, who I feel like a lot of Rockets fans in particular are very excited about Nikola Jovic. But let's start with Ty Washington as the first name that we bring up here on this list of players out of Kentucky, freshman point guard, good size, 6'3", 185 pounds. Kind of walk me through your initial first impressions of Ty.
Well, I remember my first impression where I was like, who's this 10-year-old on a basketball court? Because he looked so, there's something about his stature. He just looks small, even though he's like 6'3", which is a tall man. He just looks like really diminutive. But he just puts his arms out and he realizes he's got this insane wingspan. And he's just this very sort of competitive player who like, even though he looks really unimposing in a way, to me anyway, just first glance, first impression, he's really competitive and he can be a difference maker on both ends. I think it's a reach that he'll be available at 17. I think this is definite move up territory. He did have obviously a disappointed end of the year and the tournament. So there's a chance he could slip. But this is someone who a lot of mocks have sort of 12, 11, that sort of New York, Charlotte range, who you never know what they're going to do. So like Ty is a supremely skilled player, I think, as a pick and roll operator, as a shooter, who's, you know, young and the fit is, you know, a bit odd. A lot of these players in this range are guards where you think Houston need more guards, but it's Malachi Branham and, you know, Johnny Davis again for move up potential Ty and, EJ Liddell, well, he's a forward, but, you know, more of a scoring hands-on player. So it's an odd fit, but I am like a Ty truther. I think Ty was having this amazing stretch until about January, and then he kind of got injured. He got a couple of injuries and he tried to play through them. But if you look at his stats through to like mid-January, it was basically like 50% from a field, 40% from free. And there's this kind of like guy who can attack space against drop. So the thing to know about Ty is that he's this very much of the ilk of kind of like a Chris Paul, CJ McCollum. Like he doesn't get to the rim a lot, and he does. So most of his shots are in mid range. So I remember thinking like this is such a tough way to live as a guard in the NBA. Like he basically has to shoot incredible, and then you look at his shot and he shoots incredible. So it's kind of like as long as he can hit 50% or like 60% from the kind of the elbows, which he does, then that's going to be great. But it's such a high bar for him, and right now he's clearing it, but that's such a tough way to make a living, obviously.
You know, it's so weird in the amount of games that I've seen of him play in, you know, and you and I kind of evaluate prospects a little bit differently. You go really deep into, you know, like full game analysis of these guys. And that's something that like I need to get better at doing. But in the clips that I've seen of him and what I have seen, it reminds me very much of like, kind of like old school, like Andre Miller a little bit. Like maybe that's a bit of a throwback name for depending on the age of our fans, depending on the age of listeners, but just his overall like control and feel for the game is there. And I think that's definitely something that kind of stands out. And you mentioned, obviously the Rockets kind of had this glut at the guard spot for sure. But I feel like a lot of Rockets fans think that Dacian Nix can kind of be this guy, right? That more so traditional, like point guard, good feel for the game type guy, as opposed to KPJ, who's like balancing being like a dynamic scoring wing as well as a point guard. And I feel like you get a lot of that with Ty Washington. It is more so that general, you know, on the floor, somebody who can really get you into your sets and kind of orchestrate an offense, you know, better than what I think we've seen at times out of some of the current Rockets guard rotation.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, a point guard masquerading as a shooting guard. So the thing to know about his team is obviously like he doesn't play with like kind of these rim running above the break centers. So like the most common play he'll do in pick and roll is a pick and pop with Shibue from the free throw line, which is like just not something that exists in the NBA. If you do run in a pick and pop, it's high pick and pop above a break on the freeze. So he's just, and we saw this in the tournament game, like he just had nothing going. He was just so cramped. And, you know, they've got all these 6'9 forwards who aren't really centers. I mean, Chiba is an amazing player. Like he's, you know, he's a great college basketball player. But when you try to transfer like guard skills to the NBA, he just doesn't have that. You know, I would be, you know, most NBA teams play drop coverage. And like if you give Ty, you know, a pick and roll center, he'd just absolutely destroy any team in drop because he's just running into floaters and open mid range shots where he's just one of the best mid-range shooters that you'll see in any draft year. You know, he's got the opportunity to be, you know, that kind of Devin Booker, CJ McCollum, Chris Paul type player. You know, that potential anyway to be just killing teams and forcing them to go away from their preferred drop schemes. You know, so many teams want to hide bigs now who have talent. You know, the NBA shifted towards centers having talent. Houston Rockets have got a couple ourselves who maybe you have to hide them on defense. And Ty's a guy who just completely exposes that. The real question about him is just whether he can be a playmaker, you know, for 36 minutes of a game, or whether it's just sort of 10 minutes here and there, and whether he can make those high level sort of pick and roll reads that we just didn't really get much chance to see because he's not playing in an NBA system.
What have you seen out of him defensively that either stands out in a good way or in a bad way? Because you talked about his stature, and that was something kind of that stood out to me a little bit too, is when I first started watching him before pulling up like his bio and stuff and like looking at his actual, like, actual metrics, I was like, yo, this guy does seem a little small on the floor. And I wonder if that's going to be, you know, an issue for him defensively, maybe getting taken advantage of by some bigger guards at the NBA level.
Yeah, I think, I think off ball, first of all, is his like defending two guards. So I think Ty is like an amazing chaser. So he's so good at chasing off ball, and he cuts spaces and shoots a gap so well because it's just so fast off a mark in his agility. And like he just goes around screens so fast. And like if he can go under a screen, he's meeting you there immediately. So like I've got this cut. I'll probably put it up on YouTube at some point, on Twitter at some point. But I just clipped like 20 videos of him just chasing off ball. And it's like amazing. And when so many like teams like to get their off ball, whether it's just a two guard, but you know, they might have like Jalen Green, you'll have him start off ball. Ty's got the potential to make someone like that's life miserable just by never giving him any ounce. And like he just recovers so well. In terms of on-ball stuff, you know, I actually think so. This is where you talk about like the deep, deep dives. Like anyone who's been on Clutch Fans for long enough will remember this legendary thread about James Harden's anterior pelvic tilt, which means that he has a body where his kind of butt sticks out, his belly kind of protrudes forward, and it kind of makes him look fat when he's not actually that fat. And I think Ty's kind of got something like that where his kind of torso really sticks out quite well. It's almost like pigeon chested. And this is so weird to talk about like somebody else's body this way, but it really helps him defend drives really well. He absorbs contact very well. Kind of like CJ McCollum kind of like had that Harden-esque transformation of his body where like he's small, but he just kind of got like thick around the waist and around the chest kind of thing. And obviously put a lot of work in the weight room. I actually do see Ty being able to do that. And the way he absorbs drives is actually way bigger and way more strong than you would you'd think. And I think he's getting some help from like his body there. And obviously if he hits a weight room in the NBA as well, I think he has potential to be actually a quite good, you know, drive defender and on-ball defender, as well as like he uses his wingspan in passing like lanes, you know, as good as anyone you'll see. Yeah, which is great for, you know, a lot. He's got, I don't know what his wingspan is, it's probably 6'10", but he uses it so well for disruption and helping. So overall, I actually think he'll be a good defender.
You know, we probably should have led with this, but this is just my fault for being an absolutely atrocious host of this show. But of the, you know, of these three guys we're talking about for pick number 17 right here, we've got Ty Washington. The Athletic has him mocked at pick number 15 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Tankathon has him mocked at pick number 11, I want to say it was, that I'm making sure. Yeah, pick number 11 to the New York Knicks. Of these three guys, Nathan, you know, if you had to order them 1 through 3 and who you'd be most interested and then kind of least interested at pick number 17 for the Rockets, if all three of them were still on the board, how would you order them?
100% it'd be Tari Eason first, who I think is just a perfect fit for Houston, which we'll get into later. Then Ty, then Jovic.
Okay. All right. Well, then we're going in the completely wrong order here, as we're saving Tari Eason for last. Coming up, we're going to talk about Nikola Jovic and what he would look like potentially here for the Houston Rockets after a quick message from our friends over at Bet Online. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all of your sports betting stats and info. Find out the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's basketball playoffs and the start of Major League Baseball season. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, the NBA draft, and more. And speaking of the NBA draft right now, who do you think goes number one overall in this year's NBA draft? You can look at the odds for that over at BetOnline right now. Jabari Smith Jr., my favorite for the Houston Rockets, is -125 to be the number one overall pick. Then you got Chet Holmgren at +215, and now Paolo Banchero, a distant third, at +325. Head over to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action available to you. Bet Online, it's where the game starts. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, appreciate you for making Locked On Rockets your first listen each and every day. For your next listen, be sure to check out the Locked On Now podcast, nightly recaps of every NBA game with analysis from our local experts, free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Now, Nathan, it's funny that I think, you know, maybe you're a bit lower on Nikola Jovic than maybe the consensus of Rockets fans, because I feel like that's a name that keeps getting thrown around a lot. And I feel like a lot of Rockets fans would be very content with taking Jovic at 17, but I feel like that's almost maybe not reaching for Jovic a bit, but a lot of mocks that I keep seeing have Jovic a bit more, you know, later in the first round, around like 24, 25, 26, 27, that kind of area. I will say that I am intrigued by Jovic because he feels like a really talented, just all around prospect, especially when you consider that, you know, that 3-point shot, you know, 34% on the season for him. But I think that when you look at the way that he shoots, there's hope that he's, you know, there's nothing like mechanically wrong with the shot. It's a good looking form. And if he can really get the shot, you know, to a bit, you know, a bit of a higher percentage range, 35, 36, 37, he's just a really all around good player, like a jack of all trades type guy. At least that's my first impressions of him.
Yeah, well, it's the shooting that worries me is actually the 2-point shot. So he's shooting 48% from two. And most of those are at the rim. It's not like he takes long twos or anything. I don't know what's happening. I mean, smaller sample size, he didn't play that much, many minutes last year, but he was like 70% from two, and now he's just dropped so much. And he's hesitant when going to the rim. This is something that causes a lot of turnovers for him. He's become kind of like this pass-first guy who's trying these crazy passes because, like, he looks, you know, it stands out for sure, and it probably looks good on highlights. And I think, you know, a lot of people see, you know, 6'10 European who can pass. We think, wow, that's very like a sexy pick. But I think he makes a lot of bad decisions on the drives. I think he will drive. He doesn't want to go up to try and finish over traffic where he's just bad at it right now. And he'll throw the passes, and it's like he goes under the rim and he makes a crop, like a wraparound wing pass of your ring, and you go, oh, that's cool. And you realize there's nobody there and it's a turnover. Like, I don't know. He kind of passes without seeing, you know, who's there. And a lot of people think, is this really good passer? So I think I'm in a minority on this. So a lot of people, you know, listen to other people as well. But, you know, I and he is a good passer, you know, for 6'10", for sure. But, like, he's just, I don't see this great vision, you know. I don't see this, like, you know, wow, he can be a playmaker. I wouldn't want to have him bring him the ball up and running pick and rolls, which is what he does a lot for Mega Basket right now. I think he throws it away and, like, turns the ball over a lot. I think he's got, like, a 30% turnover rates on pick and roll ball handling, because he just it's like a vision where he'll see a guy, but then he won't see the defender coming to close him out, and then it's like a steal. So it's a lot to work on him for that bit. I mean, if you want to just take a complete swing on high upside, he's 18 years old, and the fact that maybe he can even see these pockets in the first place makes him potential. But for me, it's the lack of finishing at the rim combined with not being like, he's a good passer, I wouldn't say he's a great passer. He's a good ball handler, I wouldn't say he's a great ball handler. So it's a bit like jack of all trades, master of none. Other than the three-point shooting, where I think he does have this really great form. And I think he's shooting 38.8% on catch and shoot threes. Weirdly, higher on guard of catch and shoot threes, 14.5%, because obviously he's just got this high release point. So I think he does have a really nice stroke, and that he could be a high 30s guy, which, when you're 6'10", that's very appealing. But, when it's combined with maybe not being the force he is on the ball that people might think he is, and the defense, which is a struggle, then obviously that's why I don't particularly like him. And the fit for Houston when you've got Christian Wood and Alperen Şengün is questionable too.
Whoa. We're not manifesting Christian Wood still being here next season. Don't do that on this podcast, Nathan. Come on. I know that we've been heavily focused on draft stuff in all your recent appearances, and we haven't quite talked too much about the rest of the Rockets roster, but clearly I did not slide you the memo quick enough that we're manifesting Christian Wood being traded. I hope he has a great career away from the Houston Rockets, but we're trying to get Alperen Şengün as the starting five next season. And I do think that
Jovic and Şengün is that's not going to work either defensively. I mean, Jovic defends the perimeter like all the time for Mega. He doesn't really play as a drop man or the rim. And he's okay. Like you could even say he's decent, but he's decent against Serbian competition. And he gets shaken out of his position all the time on the perimeter because he's very bouncy. It's quite, he's trying to be on his feet and like move around and stuff and not be flat footed. But you can just rock him one way or another with a juke or a head fake or a crossover in and out. And he's just like out of the play and he has to recover. And every guard in the NBA can do that. You know, your backup point guard can, DJ Augustine can do that and drive past you and get to the rim. You know, like I think he's helped a lot by it because Mega has like five guys who are all 6'10". It's like, it's difficult to scout Jovic on your laptop because they have like four white guys who are 6'10" who have short cropped hair and you have to like look for the numbers on the back if you watch it on like 360p or whatever. So like, it's a bit like Cleveland. So like if he played with Mobley and Allen, like Markkanen does, and he defends the perimeter and he just kind of, he's tall, has his arms up and funnels them into great shot blockers, then he'll be fine. But if he's like isolated on islands, defending pick and rolls and isolations, and he's the five, or he's only got one shot blocker behind him trying to rotate, then he's going to really struggle. So in Houston, he's going to really struggle because we don't have defense anywhere, really. But certainly we don't protect, unless we get Chet Holmgren, then it kind of gets a little bit interesting. But
yeah. I was about to say, so what you're saying is draft Chet Holmgren with the first pick at the top of the draft, and then you can entertain the Nikola Jovic pick a little bit more later on in the draft. Yeah. And it's, I do think maybe we do get a little bit caught up in like, 6'10", European, good feel for the game, quality passer, maybe a bit of that, like, maybe a bit of a point forward kind of vibe. But the way that you're talking about it, maybe he's not necessarily... Maybe he shouldn't be used as like the primary point of like, a playmaker for a team. And maybe, do you think maybe he could, flourish as maybe like a secondary playmaker, somebody that, you get him, get him in the middle of the floor after like setting a good screen, something like that. And then he can be kind of the connective tissue for an offense rather than the guy initiating things.
Well, I think in that sense, I prefer Tari Eason. I'll talk about it a little bit more, but I prefer his actions, whereas Tari will get in a dribble handoff position and he'll like fake and drive to the rim, and it's a bit more versatile, where Nikola Jovic, he just wants to bring the ball up and run pick and rolls, and it's very much against like set defenses. It's not like this attacking gaps and or like improvisation type of thing like maybe Eason does. I've done this rant before. I don't know if I've done it on the show, but like, I don't really care if you're 6'10 who has a good handle. I care if you've got a good handle for an NBA player. I'd rather just have a 6'3 guy with a better handle attack. And like, if you can attack mismatches and attack big defenders, obviously that's good. That is a positive. But I fell for the Christian Wood stuff in Detroit when I was looking at the highlights, thinking, oh my God, he's bringing the ball up, he's doing this, he's passing out the short roll, and it's amazing. And then you realize, like, yeah, Christian Wood's probably in the top 1% of 7-footers who can handle the ball, but like, he's probably in the bottom like 10% of NBA players who can handle the ball. It's just like not, it's like hipstery, sexy thing that was very like in a few years ago when everyone thought basketball would be 1 to 5, 6, 10, but that's not happened. And you still have you know, you look at Utah, Spencer Dinwiddie and Jalen Brunson killing them right now in Dallas. Like, you want ball handlers who are just very good. The standard in the NBA is so high that just because you're 6'10 and have a handle, that doesn't move you as much as probably it did a couple of years ago.
You know, if we could just equip everybody in the NBA with a handle like Eric Gordon's, I feel like the league would be better off for it, just because I would love to see.
He has one move and he knows it and he's going to do it and he's going to kill LeBron James with it.
On that note, I feel like we completely downsold Nikola Jovic here. So there's going to be a ton of like Rockets fans listening to this and be like, never mind, I'm scratching him off my board. Send him down to the second round.
Yeah, look, I mean, he's 18 and, you know, he's got a bank of skills that are, you know, he's got a lot of options to get good in a sense. And the shooting, the fact that he's like a 40% catch and shoot guy, or 39%. That's such a weapon. Like, you look at, you know, Markkanen getting hot in that Cleveland playing game against Atlanta, I think, where he was just killing him in the first half. Like, having basically just acting as a spot up shooter, like, shooting is good, and there's not many great shooters in this draft. So even if you just saw him as a guard, he's like Malachi Branham is a guard whose best asset is that he's a good shooter, and Nikola Jovic is a good shooter. So even if you just forget everything else, for shooting is there, and that's a plus for him for sure. Like, I would be very intrigued if Houston pick him. I wouldn't pick him, but he might be the best player left on the board. So I wouldn't be like, oh, shit, we thought. I would be like, oh, this is actually an interesting pick, at least, and he's got some skills.
Interesting tools to build on for Nikola Jovic, to be sure. But apparently we saved the best for last. Nathan's favorite pick here, Tari Eason. We're going to get there in just a moment after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. When it comes to protein bars, you got to check out Built Bar. They are the number one protein bar on the market. They've got so many incredible flavors to choose from. Before I even get to the flavors, every single bar is coated in 100% delicious chocolate. They're not gritty or chalky like other protein bars out there. The consistency is never off. And again, the flavors, they've got so many great options to choose from. Raspberry, strawberry, salted caramel, mint brownie, peanut butter, my personal favorite, coconut brownie chunk, cookies and cream. You really just can't go wrong with any single flavor on their menu. Every single bar is going to be low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber. Amazing if you're on a keto diet. Amazing if you're trying to cut back a little bit, lose a little bit of weight, all of that. You can check them out. Just go to built.com and use promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your very next order of the best tasting protein bars that are out there on the market right now. Again, that's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, appreciate you for making Locked On Rockets your first listen each and every day. For your second listen, be sure to check out the Locked On NBA podcast. From the first jump of the play-in tournament to the last possession of the finals, Locked On experts take you deep inside the playoffs with insight and analysis affecting all 30 teams. I host the Monday show. It's always a ton of fun. Be sure to check that out wherever you get your podcasts. Now, Nathan, as we get here to Tari Eason from LSU, he's a little bit older than some of the other guys we're talking about. He'll be 21 by the time the draft rolls around. And, you know, sometimes people look at that as like maybe like a weakness because, you know, players don't have, I guess, as much room to grow, improve, whatever. If they're, you know, I guess maybe there's a bit more of an idea like, oh, if you're 18, 19, like you can grow, you can get better at this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, so coming out 21, but he's, you know, a 4'6", 8", good size, 215, 220 about. Give me your elevator pitch for Tari Eason, because you seem incredibly excited about him.
Yeah, so I was scribbling some notes before we came on. So, and I didn't do many on. So this is Tai. Can you see?
Okay.
This is Jovic. And then, like, this is Tari. And I've got more just sheets. I've got all Tari. That's all. It's all blank. But Tari, I love Tari.
Let me just throw it out there for our audio only listeners. You know, I know we got some nice ASMR there of you flipping through your notes, you know, but it looked like it was about a quarter page of notes on Tai, then maybe about a half page of notes on Jovic. And then it was just like a complete full page on Tari Eason, and then like more notes that he was like flipping through. Well,
So whenever I watch Tari, I think this guy's like should go like 6 or 7. And then I remember that his age is 21. And then I think, oh, yeah, I should know that. Fair enough, he's old. Tari is like my absolute perfect dream fit for Houston because he's just got size. He can defend the perimeter. He's one of the best defenders in the draft. He can defend fours. You know, he's a power forward who can defend multiple positions. Those are just so valuable in the league. Like, you look at, you know, I was thinking this the other day. Like, you look at what Aaron Gordon went for. And Aaron Gordon, everyone knew, was kind of like flawed player, but he went for basically two first-round picks, including RJ Hampton, or Robert Covington had that really struggled series against OKC where he's kind of exposed on the big stage. We got two first round picks for him. There were just, and Larry Nance is like, had this, I think he got a first and then another first from Portland and then New Orleans. So like these players who aren't, no one would say like, oh, they're elite players, but are just any defensive player of the four who has any sort of semblance of an offensive game is just valuable because there are just so few players like them and like Tari Eason, who you can put on a Kawhi or Paul George and switch him onto like Dame and blitzes and things. Like he defends the perimeter like every possession for LSU, and he's got that size to, you know, like my absolute dream, which is like what I wake up. I go to bed every night thinking of this, and I wake up every morning thinking of this, which is Chet at one and Tari Eason at 17. Or we have to move up to get him because it's like you've just got this amazing front court defensive, you know, locked in for the next 10 years where you could probably put Tari on, you know, always question about can Chet guard Embiid or whatever. I bet you could put Tari on him a bit like what Houston did with PJ Tucker and have Chet helping like baseline. And then you could actually have something going because you've got the size of Tari and then the wingspan of Chet to sort of disrupt and weak side block. And so like, I think they're a great tandem. And I think Tari is, like, you watch him literally for watching for 2 minutes, you'll see he's so good defensively. He's got good hips. He switches stances left, right. He can move his hips very well. And he absorbs contact very well. So defensively, he's just like, I just want him like so bad. And I would give up anything to move up if we have to. And he seems to be sliding a little bit on mock. So like I would have thought no way he's available at 17, but recently he's kind of getting there.
You know, you mentioned kind of his switchability. As far as some of the mocks go, right now The Athletic has him mocked at 14, I believe, to the Charlotte Hornets. And then Tankathon has him mocked at 10 to the Washington Wizards, so a bit higher.
Yeah, I saw Jonathan Wasserman for Bleacher Report had him 18 picked after Houston. And that gave me a lot of hope.
Don't worry, you're just like that one guy. You're like, please be true.
This is my guy.
You know, you mentioned, you know, just obviously the switchability, and that's always, I feel like that's one of the first things that we jump to, especially in today's NBA, where you almost have to be able to guard multiple positions unless you're the true five on the floor. And even then you're going to, you know, we see moments where you get barbecue chickened out there on the court if you can't, you know, keep up with some of the twitchier, you know, guards in the league, or if you don't have a defensive scheme that at least, you know, covers you in that sense. But with Tari, you know, his physicals don't exactly jump off the page. I mean, he's 6'8", he's got a good size. I don't know his wingspan right off the top of my head. I don't have that here in my notes. But has he shown you enough where he looks like one of those guys that even at 6'8", you feel really comfortable throwing him on some of those bigger guys like an Embiid or like a Jokic? Maybe a la a bit, you know, I hate throwing this comp around because I feel like we overuse it at times, but maybe a Draymond Green in the sense, somebody who utilizes their physical gifts really well, despite not, you know, jumping off the page with their physical attributes.
Yeah, I think Draymond's got a longer wingspan. He's kind of got that center of gravity where sounds a bit weird, but he's got a lot of like junk in the trunk. Like he keeps him grounded in post-ups. I don't think Tari's quite about it. And the one nitpick is that I wish he had a bit longer wingspan. I think he's like 6'9". It's like only plus one or whatever. If he was like 7 foot, it's great. But he contests really well on the perimeter anyway. He's got a quick first leap and like he gets his arms up really well. A bit like PJ Tucker did. Tucker didn't have a great wingspan really. It didn't seem like it anyway. So yeah, I think mostly it's the fact that he can guard the perimeter. And you know, whether he can stick him on a post up against Jokic and Embiid, like that's, you know, it's a few years down the line where maybe he puts on a lot of muscle and he seems like he's got body to add a lot and just become this kind of like bowling ball a little bit like Tucker. But for me, it's the big thing is that, you know, how many 6'8 guys can actually guards like we saw with Robert Covington, and, you know, eventually we get mismatched because we just can't move the hips and we're not as fluid. Whereas I think Tara is actually very fluid. And I think that's, you know, that is what he does at LSU. And obviously there's higher competition at the NBA, but, you know, that'll be such a weapon for Houston where you have like 6'5", 6'6", KPJ and Jalen. And then, you know, if Sengun's going to be the starter down the line, then you need defense and isolation defense at every other position. Switch 1-4 and keep everyone away from the basket to protect Sengun. And Tari like just slots in perfectly. And then obviously we can talk about offense. I love his offensive game as well.
That's what I wanted to get to that next, because give me like a comp in your mind, somebody that the play style kind of mirrors a little bit for Tari Eason when you watch him play offensively.
So what came to my mind was Josh Smith when he played for Houston. Well, I always remember Jalen Rose saying that, because Josh Smith's nickname was Jay Smooth, and Jalen Rose said it should be Jay Rough because he plays like this really rough style of basketball. For some reason, I always remember that line, but like he's a very like physical driver. So like Tari will catch a ball at the top of the key. And Tari, the thing that I love about Tari, he's got a 51.5% free throw rate. So for every shot he takes, well, for every two shots he takes, one is a free throw, one is a trip to the line, which is the best in the NBA, in the draft. So like it's way higher than, you know, and to have him and Cengun, who's really good at it as well, as free throw, like foul merchants on drives. He'll get the ball at the top of the key and he'll like look for dribble handoffs and he'll turn, you know, Cengun does it as well. Jeff Green did it a lot for Houston, which is one of my favorite moves in the NBA. And when you're driving on a 4 or a 5 from a perimeter where you're looking for a pass, then you suddenly drive, it just invites hand checks immediately. So he gets hand checks a lot. And he's just such a physical driver. He digs his shoulder. And what he's really good at is he'll have his head down because he's like, you know, pounding, you know, dribbling, driving to the rim. And he can suddenly pick his head up and then he transfers left and he's finishing. So he's very like aware situationally of what is going on, even though he's kind of looks a bit like he's just kind of a bit like Eric Gordon, where it's just digging in with his shoulder and really physical. So he's this really like power driver, which is what I think will really translate to the NBA. And he's not the quickest. He's not a high leaper or anything, but he's strong and he takes really long leaps. He only a couple of steps to the basket. So the free throw shooting and the driving, where there was a spell for LSU where he just became their first option basically, and he started averaging 20 points a game and he was unstoppable. And like having that's when I talked about Jovic, that's a sort of secondary playmaking I like, where it's like you're looking for a dribble handoff, you're looking for a delay action where the big man has it at the top of the key, and then you just kind of, there's nothing on, so then you just drive, and that's like the secondary stuff I like, and I think what Tari excels at.
Those are some of my, you know, you mentioned you love seeing it when, you know, when Tari does it, when Cengun does it within the Rockets offense. I love those plays because they almost surprise you as the viewer, right? Because you're expecting, okay, he's looking for the dribble handoff. Mm-hmm. He's looking for this, that. You almost bait the defense into that false sense of security. And then if you're quick enough to be able to, you know, turn on your heel and just power towards the rim, you can easily create some contact, get some easy opportunities that way, or create for your teammates. How is Tari's ability to create for himself when he doesn't have that like element of surprise, right? Like, is he a guy that you can give the ball to and, you know, expect him to create out of the high post, maybe get to his own shots, or is that not quite in his bag yet?
I think he has like a nice stutter rip move where he'll fake one way and just quickly go the other way. Like I said, he's not someone you just give the ball to 20 possessions and ask him to create his own shot. In the NBA, maybe he just averages 8 points per game and he's just a defensive stopper. But the fact that he even has this stuff at college level, I think it gives me some hope. And then obviously the 3-point shooting is like what a lot of people are down on him by. But like his 3-point shots, so he shot 39% on catch and shoot threes, 44% unguarded. And most of his shots, so he only took 11 corner threes. So I think what 80%, 90% of his shots are above the break threes, which like, you know, that's, makes it a much harder degree. And he actually shot 48% from the top of the key. So 36% overall. So just if I'm throwing all these numbers out, he didn't shoot overall great. But like when most of your shots are coming from above the break, that gives me hope that it's going to translate a bit to the NBA. And they aren't these kind of like incredibly easy shots where he's just getting spoon-fed corner free. So I kind of like his shot. It's a bit like, it reminds me of like the basketball robot, if you've seen that, where he kind of like shoots a free throws and like his arm cocks back so much. It's like, it's mechanical, but it's kind of fluid, and it's all in motion. So I kind of like his shot, and he doesn't pass up threes. He only takes like 2 or 3 a game or whatever, so he's not his high volume guy. But he's not someone like Jay Shante who just passes up so many open threes. He wants to drive and drive as a first option, as it should be, because he's so good at him. But when he's just like passes to him and he's wide open, and you know you think can shoot it, he will shoot it.
Well, that's a good sign, because I think some of those were probably the most frustrating plays to witness this past season, is Jay Sean Tate catches the ball in the perimeter and the big is like, you know, dropped all the way down into the 10 to 15 foot range, just ignoring him completely. And he's not even looking to shoot the ball or do anything with it. He's exclusively looking for that next dribble handoff or to set the next screen or whatever. And those were kind of mind boggling plays, because you're like, you're a 6'4" wing out there and you're wide open and not willing to shoot the basketball. It's tough to see. When you look at Tari, do you have like a biggest red flag for him necessarily, like offensively or defensively? It could be either side of the ball. Like the thing that gives you the most pause for concern with him.
Not really. I mean, I think like he is a little bit unathletic, so he's below the rim a lot, and like they put him in the dunker spot quite a bit. And he struggles to finish first because he just can't, you know, he's not a big dunker in terms of just that jumping and catching lobs or whatever. But like a lot of players, you know, as long as he just keeps that free throw rate up and he's able to just carry that strength over to the NBA, I don't think he's got this huge glaring hole. I mean, the three-point shot, yeah, it's low volume, so it's always going to be small sample size, and he's going to have to keep working on it. But, like, if I could give you right now Jayson Tate, but with 4 extra inches, like, you take that, like, 17, that sounds amazing. So, and I don't think he's got the touch around the rim as that Tate, where he's got these, like, drop steps and turnarounds, and, like, he doesn't have the kind of finishing crap, but he's got the brute strength, you know, the brute force to do it. So, that's the only worry, where does that translate fully against stronger guys in the NBA? Does he have an advantage that he's 21? I mean, there are some big guys, in, you know, and the paint is quite full in college. So you could argue that it'd actually be, in a sense, easier. But yeah, if he adds like a jump shot and a floor to him, kind of that type of thing, then it's like, you know, I mean, I don't think he will, but that's when it becomes very, very exciting. But give me just like 6'8 role player who can defend multiple positions and drive and hit open threes, and like, yeah, I'll take that at 10, to be honest, never mind 17.
You know, it's crazy because you look at some of the guys like historically who have had to like overcome, you know, being, you know, a bit more undersized or smaller for their positions or whatever. And like, obviously Jayson Tate's the one that comes to mind for Rockets fans like right now, but you can even look at a PJ Tucker, right? Somebody who had to really grind to get to where he was as a defensive stalwart in the NBA, a bit more undersized for his position, but really just, you know, the technical aspect of the game was there. He worked really hard, outworked a lot of other guys on the floor. You go back to even, you know, let's go back to even a guy like Chuck Hayes, who an undersized, you know, 4 or 5, you know, defensive, you know, specialist, if you will, you know, during his time with the Houston Rockets. And you wonder if those guys would have still had the same level or drive to be as skilled as they were in their respective positions if they weren't undersized, if they weren't, you know, if they didn't, you know, because they didn't have some of the gifts that their opponents had. So they had to outwork, they had to outplay, be smarter than their opponents. And maybe that's, you know, kind of the trade-off here is Jayson Tate has that, like, you know, innate ability, the finesse to finish in and around the rim and in the land of the trees, but he's had to have that ability because he's not just 6'8". He doesn't have just the brute force to go up against some of those guys in the land of the trees. But you mentioned, you know, wanting to trade up for him. And last year's NBA draft, we found it after the fact that the Rockets were willing to move all the way up to even pick number 6 to try and get Alperen Şengün, and they wound up, you know, stealing him at pick number 16. So how high would you be willing to go, you know, in trade negotiations, in trying to trade up in this draft to pick up Tari Eason? Like, where's your cutoff for him?
Right, so very quick, like, obviously you're not getting in the top 5, so then it's like out of the top 6, it's like Keegan Murray, Benedict Mathurin. Like, he's my perfect role player fit for Houston. So like, I would be targeting Charlotte, New York. I think Poland didn't get that pick at all, so that takes a team off the board. But like, I would be looking at that now. The question is what you're giving up, and like, if you can trade Christian Wood for PJ Washington and you know, the chance of get Tari Eason, and I'd do that in a heartbeat because, you know, I love that trade. So like, I would be very, very aggressive moving up in this draft, and I would trade the 2023 pick and the Milwaukee 2023 pick and 17 to get Tari Eason. I'd have to.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's, I mean, I feel like this entire podcast just turned into a Tari Eason propaganda show. But with good reason. I'm a little bit higher on Tari Eason now coming in. I thought he had, you know, had some dynamic potential, looked really good. But now I walk away feeling a little bit more excited about him, and down a bit more on Nikola Jovic, which I didn't expect to quite happen. So, with that, that's going to do it for today's edition of our, you know, Houston Rockets prospect breakdown. Nathan, you know the drill. Let our listeners know where they can track you down at.
At Nathan Fogg 1, and I'm going to be doing very, very long deep dives on the top 5. So I've got a big Jaden Ivey video probably coming out next week. So I'll be tweeting that out. Pour a cup of coffee because it's going to be, I think, nearly an hour long. So.
I definitely look forward to, you know, the breakdowns that you do. Obviously, we do these, you know, draft breakdown podcasts, and I walk away feeling like a more informed fan because of it. So I'm looking forward to that. We'll be sure to share that on all of, you know, my social channels, the Locked On social channels, all of that to help promote it, get it out there. But as always, a pleasure to have you on the show, man. Looking forward to doing it again soon.
Cheers, Jackson. Thank you. Everyone Google anterior pelvic tilts.
On that note, we wrap up on anterior pelvic tilt. Hopefully you enjoyed today's breakdown of some of the interesting prospects at pick number 17 for the Houston Rockets. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, Spotify, Google. Check us out on the Odyssey app, free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Mentioned the YouTube side of things a moment ago. Check us out on YouTube. Like, comment, subscribe, all of that. How do you feel about Ty Washington, Nikola Jovic, and Tari Eason after this episode? Let us know in the comments. I do read each and every one of those every single day. But as always, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.